Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, January 7th, 2025. And Happy New Year to our listeners out there. We'll start the reading on the first page. Weather: Decatur digging out after storm. 7 inches of snow keep many at home. Road crews busy. This article's by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Getting home from a family wedding in Nashville proved to be a challenge for Decatur's John Shirley. Shirley would normally have driven, since it's only a 5 or 6 hour trip, but knowing that central Illinois' weather in January can be nasty, he opted to fly, and chose to fly out of Decatur on New Year's Day so he could leave his car at the airport for convenience going home after the wedding. Getting to Nashville was easy. Getting home was not. I get to Chicago and I have, maybe 45 minutes to an hour before my connecting flight. So I make my way to the gate and the sign says, "We're still leaving," Shirley said. About 20 minutes before we board, they say, "Nope, we're delayed another hour." And 10 minutes later, we're canceled for the day. He found a hotel with a restaurant that also provided a shuttle, and at the hotel found a lot of other people who were also stranded for the night, he said. On Monday morning, he expected to find out that flight, too, was delayed or canceled, but after a long wait for the plane to be de-iced, he arrived at Decatur Airport. The parking lot was partially plowed, but he still had to navigate the part that wasn't, and the residential streets hadn't yet been plowed either. "I managed to slide on through and slide into my garage," she said. Later, he added, he's going to have to work on shoveling his drive, but for the moment, he was just glad to be home and indoors where it's warm. The City of Decatur Street Department is putting in 12-hour shifts to get the main arteries cleared, said Rob Wagers, which have to be the top priority. Now that it's stopped snowing, the plow drivers have a better chance of getting those routes cleared curb to curb and putting down salt mixed with calcium to melt the layer of packed snow. Overnight, the crews working 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. were struggling against the still-falling snow so that the routes they plowed were filling back up behind them, Wager said Monday morning. "We always stay on those main roads until we're 100% clear curb to curb," he said. "If those aren't open, you're not going anywhere. We're hoping to get into neighborhoods this evening. The next crew coming in at 11 a.m. will finish up on the main routes, and now that they can make some headway, get those 100% open. Obviously, there's snow left on the pavement after plowing because it's packed down from traffic. It's never fast enough for anybody. We take a whole lot of heat every year. People don't always understand the procedure and the importance of keeping the main arteries clear before starting on residential streets, and they get impatient," he said. Macon County Sheriff Jim Root, speaking Monday, said county road crews had trouble for a while keeping up with the sheer amount of snowfall as they battled to clear the highways. He advised motorists to stay out of their way and let them get to their vital work and get it done. "And hopefully enough people will continue to stay home so those crews can do what they need to do," he added. That request was made easier to follow with schools, government buildings, and many businesses deciding to close on Monday. Gregory Urban, 60, didn't have anywhere important to be, but he was shoveling the driveway of his Decatur apartment building anyway on Monday. "It makes it easier for everybody else to get out," said Irvin. He said he has more elderly neighbors who will need the help, especially with a hill accessing the parking lot. Nearby, walking down Monroe Street, was Charles Mitchell, who said he was walking to check on his friend after the snowstorm. "He's an older guy," said Mitchell. "I don't know if he's stuck. The system that dumped 7 inches of snow on Decatur has passed," said John Bumgardner, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, "and temperatures will stay frigid for the next several days, with the high on Tuesday in the low 20s and in the teens Wednesday and Thursday, with a low of 1 on Wednesday night. The snow really helps with that cold temperature," he said. "If the winds go calm, the snow mitigates the warmth the earth radiates overnight. You don't think of the ground being warm, but when we have snow, it makes it a bit colder. There's a 30% chance of snow late Friday to overnight Friday," he said. "It's winter here. It's here." Let's see. And there is a large black and white photo on this part of the article. A closed sign displays in the window of Lyle Campbell & Son Realtors after the snowstorm In Decatur, schools, government offices, and many businesses were closed Monday in the wake of the first heavy snow of the year. The photo credit is Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, and there is another larger color photo here. Gregory Irvin shovels the driveway of his apartment building after the snowstorm in Decatur on Monday, January 6th. It makes it easier for everybody else to get out, said Irvin. And he's wearing a royal blue parka with a fur hood. No gloves, but orange-brown boots and jeans. And a shovel that looks well used. And he has a smile on his face, and he has a lot of work to do. Joseph Ressler, Photos, Herald and Review. Decatur may get track and casino, the state government heading. Bill may permit harness racing and gambling site. This article's by Brendan Moore, Springfield. Decatur is in line to be the site of a horse racing track with a casino under legislation in the works in the state capitol. The legislation, which has yet to be filed, would specifically authorize an organizational license for harness racing in Macon County. Though the license would technically be open to any group that applies for it, the legislation is aimed at opening the door for Chicago-based Revolutionary Racing to develop a more than 200-acre parcel of vacant land. At the northwest corner of U.S. 36 and Wickles Road in a harness racetrack. The proposed development would also include a casino to be located near the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel, with 900 gaming positions and a 60,000-square-foot sports complex, according to officials briefed on the plans. Illinois racetracks are permitted to apply for a gaming license that permits on- or near-site slot and table games, facilities known as racinos under the massive gaming expansion law Governor J.B. Pritzker signed in 2019. Officials with Revolutionary Racing did not return a request for comment on the specifics of the plan, which is described as a $150 million investment in Decatur that would create 300 permanent jobs. The group opened a $75 million gaming facility and racetrack in Kentucky in 2023. Decatur city officials are aware of the potential project. We're familiar with the Racino proposal, said Deputy City Manager John Kinseth. In a statement, the city awaits to discuss potential next steps after necessary action is taken in Springfield. State lawmakers are currently in Springfield for a lame duck session, which ends Tuesday, ahead of the swearing-in of new General Assembly on Wednesday. Lawmakers and lobbyists working on the Racino legislation say the bill is unlikely to move during the lame duck session, but will likely to be at the top of the agenda in the new session, which will run through the end of May. In addition to the Decatur angle, the legislation may establish a firm deadline for the owners of the Hawthorne Racecourse in suburban Cook County to develop their site into a new harness track and casino. The 2019 gaming expansion law authorized an additional racetrack in Chicago's south suburbs, but gave Hawthorne the power to veto any proposed project within 35 miles of its existing track. As a result, potential projects for a racetrack and casino there have been stifled. And the Illinois Harness Horsemen's Association, which represents the state's harness racing interests, have sought to have Hawthorne's veto power revoked. The legislation would also likely authorize additional race days for harness horses in Illinois. The Illinois horse racing industry has struggled mightily in recent years. The state's horse racing handle slid from $514 million $514 million in 2022 to $490 million in 2023, the lowest in 40 years, according to data from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. The 2019 legislation authorizing racinos at existing racetracks was meant to help rejuvenate the industry by bringing in new customers and generating revenue that would be used for higher purposes. But no racinos have opened in the subsequent years. The owners of FanDuel Sportsbook and Horse Racing in Collinsville have announced plans to develop a racino, but Hawthorne has yet to do so. And Arlington International Racecourse, along the state's marquee horse racing track, shuttered in 2021. The property was subsequently sold to the Chicago Bears, the team eyeing the 326-acre site for a potential stadium, demolished the track's grandstand last year. As a result, there are only two active horse racing venues in Illinois, with Hawthorne being the only one with harness racing. Jeff Davis, president of the Illinois Harness Horsemen's Association, acknowledged that our industry has been really hurt over the last 10 years and needs additional tracks to stay alive. Frankly, with all of the gaming stuff going on in Chicago, we need facilities and racing opportunities. And something downstate where a lot of our members currently reside and a lot of our breeding occurs, Davis said, this would be a boon to them. The legislation would also likely authorize additional harness racing dates at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in the summer. It's not the first time Decatur has been eyed for a potential casino. In 2016, two former Argosy Gaming Company executives said earlier they would like to develop a 400 to 600 gaming position casino in the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. However, the city was not included in the 2019 gaming expansion bill, which authorized additional casinos in Chicago, Danville, Rockford, South Suburban Cook County, Waukegan, and Williamson County. Soy City is hardly without sin, however, as it has 500 video gaming terminals, fourth highest of any city in Illinois, scattered across 85 establishments. And we have a large black and white action photo here. I'll read the caption. Ronnie Gillespie and his horse Tropical Rosie raced to the finish line at the Macon County Fair in 2019. Legislation is pending that would authorize a harness racing track and casino in Decatur. It's a great shot. You can see the wheels of the carriage and the harness kicking up the turf track, and then there's another horse and jockey right behind also kicking up as well. And Tropical Rosie is all four legs, all four hooves are off the track in full gallop, and mane flying back. It is a black and white photo, but very action-packed and really neat shot. H&R file photo. Macon County, boy killed riding inner tube ID'd. Tony Reed, Mount Zion, has this article. The 10-year-old boy who lost his life in a collision while he was riding an inner tube being pulled by an all-terrain vehicle was identified Monday as Jack Douglas Brinkotter from Mount Zion. Brinkotter was pronounced dead in the emergency room of Decatur Memorial Hospital after being rushed there following the incident, which happened around noon Sunday near Fort Daniel Road in Decatur. A second 10-year-old boy, a friend who was riding with Brinkotter, also suffered traumatic injuries when the tube they were riding swung out and collided with a large boulder. The injured friend was taken to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. And the last update received by the Macon County Sheriff's Office listed the boy as being in critical condition. Brinkotter's identity was confirmed by Macon County Coroner Michael Burkham, who said the circumstances of his death remain under investigation. He said the cause of death was blunt force trauma, but he wants to review police reports before ruling out the nature of the event that cost the boy his life. Burkham said, however, that it appears to be a terrible accident. Macon County Sheriff Jim Root said the senior officer in charge of the investigation and himself are also due to review the reports from his deputies who investigated the incident. It's still under investigation, so we wouldn't want to make any predetermined outcomes without looking at all the facts, he told the Herald and Review on Monday. This, however, looks like a tragic accident. The sheriff's office later released a statement saying it extends its deepest condolences to the Brinkotter family and the village of Mount Zion in the wake of the tragedy. A report by the Consumer Product Safety Commission said deaths in the U.S. linked to the use of, quote, off-highway vehicles, unquote, which includes ATVs, have been increasing. Fatalities nationwide totaled 2,448 deaths, resulting from 2,384 incidents from 2018 through 2020, the latest year for which full data was available. The largest portion of those deaths, 1,643, were associated with the use of ATVs specifically. We'll move on to the local and state page A3. Rock Island police man shot while dragging cop. This article is by Thomas Geyer, Rock Island. Authorities are investigating after a fatal officer-involved shooting on Sunday afternoon in Rock Island. Rock Island Deputy Police Chief Jim Morris said in a news release that officers attempted to detain a suspicious person around 3:20 p.m. near the 12th Street and 24th Avenue area. Preliminary information indicates that as the officer approached the man, he fled on foot and attempted to escape by entering the driver's side door of a running vehicle, Morris said. As the officer attempted to get the man out of the car, the man began driving the car forward, dragging the officer. The officer then shot the man, Morris said. Rock Island County Coroner Brian Gustafson said the deceased is a 22-year-old man who was pronounced dead at Unity Point Health, Trinity, Rock Island. An autopsy was tentatively planned for Monday. The officer was treated at a local hospital and released. Rock Island Police Chief Tim McLeod requested the activation of the Rock Island County Integrity Task Force to conduct the investigation into the officer's use of deadly force, Morris said. The identity of the officer and the deceased were not released as of Monday morning. Man tells police he was shot at. This article is by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police said a Decatur man managed to escape injury after a stranger pulled a gun on him and opened fire. Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department said the 19-year-old victim had been walking in the 300 block of East Center Street around 11 a.m. Thursday when he encountered the gunman, who was also on foot. The victim said he heard the suspect yell at him, and then he said the man pulled a firearm out and started shooting at him, Hagemeyer said. She said police patrols rushing to the area later recovered two spent 9mm bullet casings from the street. Hagemeyer said the shots were heard by a witness who called 911, but did not see the shooting happen. The witness did see the victim walking away from the scene and pointed him out to officers. Hagemeyer said the victim said he knew nothing about the shooter, but also described him as being, quote, mostly uncooperative, unquote, with officers. Anyone with information can contact the Decatur Police Department Investigations Division at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS. Pedestrian killed by SUV named. Circles by Tony Reed, Decatur. The pedestrian killed in Decatur when he was struck by a sport utility vehicle Friday night has been identified as Michael Foster. The 48-year-old Decatur man suffered fatal injuries as he walked in the road in the area of the 700 block of Southside Drive around 10:50 p.m. Macon County Coroner Michael Burkham confirmed Foster's identity Monday and said he had been pronounced dead at the scene of the collision. Burkham said Illinois law requires a toxicology screen of the victim's blood, and he was still awaiting those results. But he told the Herald and Review that all circumstances of the fatality point to it being ruled an accidental death. The incident is being investigated by the Decatur Police Department, whose headquarters are closed by the scene of the collision. Rather, are close by the scene of the collision. Police have said there is no indication the 64-year-old Decatur man driving the SUV involved was under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Here's a fun page, the Life and Entertainment page, coming soon. And these are, looks like 20 movies coming out. In the large color photo, Tom Cruise Center returns as Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible Final Reckoning, Paramount Pictures. I'll just read, excuse me, the titles here. Wolfman, Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy, Paddington in Peru, Sinners, Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible Final Reckoning, 28 Years Later, Megan 2.0, F1, Jurassic World Rebirth, Superman, The Fantastic Four First Steps, The Naked Gun, Freakier Friday, The Battle of Bacton Cross, Michael, Tron Ares, Wicked for Good, The Running Man, and Avatar, Fire and Ash. So the article reads, Superman, Paddington, Bridget Jones, and more. 20 films arriving this year. Adam Graham, The Detroit News, The Final Reckoning for the Mission Impossible series, Paddington's trip home to Peru, and even Freakier Friday are all on top as Hollywood heads into 2025. After largely taking 2024 off to regroup, superheroes will be back in full force. A new Captain America movie is due out in February, and Superman returns to the big screen in July. The Fantastic Four and the Thunderbolts crews will also bring their superpowers to cinemas. This year will also see the return of Bridget Jones, Jurassic Park, and Paul Thomas Anderson, for starters. Yes, there will be plenty to sort through at the movies in 2025. So here's a list of 20 movies to circle on the calendar, but circle those dates in pencil, not pen. As always, dates are subject to change. Movies are headed to theaters, except where otherwise noted. So we've already read the list. We're on the Nation and World page now, A6, and this is an update. Fake name of victim filled subway burning void. This article's by Melissa Golden, Associated Press. New York, it took police more than a week to publicly identify Debrina Kowam, 57, as the woman who was fatally set on fire in a New York subway train last month. But on the internet, it took just hours for a false name to begin spreading. In posts that circulated widely on social media after Kowam's death December 22nd, users claimed without evidence that the victim was a 29-year-old named Amelia Carter. The posts ricocheted across platforms, often accompanied by an image of a young woman that experts say may have been generated by artificial intelligence. It's not clear who first made up the claim or why, but many sharing it highlighted the immigration status of the man charged in Kowam's death. Federal immigration officials say he is a Guatemalan citizen who entered the U.S. illegally, while accusing the media of refusing to name the beautiful young white woman. That was all in quotes. Nathan Walter, an associate professor at Northwestern University who studies misinformation, said the story was manna from heaven for anti-immigration narratives, and it became a framing war while the public sought information that was not yet available. It spreads quickly because it just fits so well, he said of misinformation about the victim's identity. And when something fits so well, we typically just tend to nod along and we don't really question it. Graphic footage of Kowam engulfed in flames spread widely online soon after the December 22nd attack, boosting curiosity about her identity. But while a suspect, Sebastian Zapeta, was arrested later that day, scant details were available about the victim in the following days as authorities worked to identify her through forensics and video surveillance. Instead, users filled the void with false claims about Amelia Carter, and the names in quotes. Posts called for officials and the media to, quote, say her name, unquote. Some claimed she was on her way to visit her grandmother in Queens, despite the fact that the victim was set alight in the opposite end of the subway line in Brooklyn. Some posts compared it to the February 2024 killing of Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley by a Venezuelan man in the country illegally, which became a political rallying point for Republicans during the presidential race in support of increased border security. As the falsehood spread, some began sharing a photo of a real Amelia Carter, who then had to post on X that she was, quote, alive and well, unquote. The initial image that was shared in many of these posts had signs of being created by a generative adversarial network, a type of AI that can be used for creating images of fake people that are difficult to distinguish from the real thing, said Hani Farid, a digital forensics and misinformation expert at the University of California, Berkeley. Farid pointed to the nondescript nature of the headshot and the alignment of the eyes as indications that the image may have been AI generated, though he acknowledged that its low quality made it difficult to analyze properly. In an age where many have come to expect immediate answers, Michelle Siula Lipkin, executive director of the National Association for Media Literacy Education, noted many people have lost patience for, quote, that uncomfortable moment where we don't have all the information, unquote. Bad actors often take advantage of this, she said, preying on the public's desire to find out what's going on and promote their own agendas. Authorities finally revealed the victim of the subway burning last Tuesday, saying Kowam was from New Jersey and briefly was in a New York homeless shelter after moving to the city recently. Additionally, on this page, Speaker of the House, signs of trouble loom. Johnson retains his job, but support from GOP remains tenuous. This article's by Stephen Groves, Associated Press, Washington. While House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican, Louisiana, avoided the days-long ordeal that his predecessor Kevin McCarthy, Republican California, endured to become Speaker, his relatively swift victory was hardly a unifying moment. The tumult laid bare that Johnson retains only tenuous support from hardline conservatives who gave him their votes for now, but stand ready to dispatch him, just as they did McCarthy, if their demands aren't met. "Is he going to fight?" said Representative Ralph Norman, a South Carolina Republican who initially opposed Johnson but later changed his vote. Republicans are relishing the moment as they take unified control of Washington and rally around President-elect Donald Trump. Yet the elements that made for a turbulent House the past 2 years remain in place. Except that the stakes are far higher now as the Republicans try to deliver on Trump's agenda. The scale of the conflict to come was apparent as Congress began its new session Friday. House Republicans took shots at one another on TV and argued on the House floor. The freshly elected Speaker looked worried, and even after Johnson's victory, some GOP lawmakers openly discussed what might trigger his removal. For a time, it seemed things might get worse. After an hour of uncertainty, intense negotiations, as well as Trump calling in from a golf course to make it clear he supported Johnson, two of the three Republican holdouts changed their votes to give him the majority he needed. Norman said it was not so much Trump who changed his mind, but the fact that Johnson, as he huddled with the holdouts in the back of the House chamber, vowed he would indeed, quote, fight for everything going forward, unquote. Johnson had the difficult task of leading a Republican majority that will be even slimmer than it was in the last Congress, potentially down to a single vote, once a handful of members joined Trump's administration. Last year, the thin majority, as well as near constant defiance from his right flank, forced Johnson to rely on Democratic support to pass practically any significant legislation. He tried to turn the page in his first speech after winning the Speaker's gavel, arguing that Republicans are now empowered by a, quote, groundswell of Americans, unquote, who want to end the status quo in Washington. Speaker Johnson contends that in an environment where we have the White House and the Republican Senate, that he's going to be able to get the job done, said Representative Chip Roy, Republican Texas, who was outspoken in his criticism of Johnson. So we'll give him a chance to see. But we need to deliver. There's no room for any excuses now. Even if Johnson manages to unite his conference in the House, most legislation still will need at least some Democratic support in the Senate, where the chamber's filibuster rules prevent most bills from advancing unless they have support from at least 60 senators. Republicans will have a 53-47 majority in the Senate. Republican leadership did ease one threat to Johnson by making it more difficult to oust the Speaker through a so-called motion to vacate. Such a motion will now need at least 9 members from the majority party rather than being triggered by a single lawmaker. Democrats protested that Republicans are shielding the Speaker from bipartisan accountability. Still, within minutes of Johnson gaining the support he needed to take the speakership, the House Freedom Caucus released a letter signed by 11 members demanding that Johnson deliver ambitious policy goals, including enacting permanent border security changes, making aggressive federal spending cuts, and banning members of Congress from stock trading. Caucus members said Johnson, quote, must prove he will not fail to enact President Trump's bold agenda, unquote. Well, and with that, there is still a little bit of the article left, but not just a paragraph. We will end right here and bring to an end the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for January 7th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.